WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Dave Frischberg and Bob Dureau have a new CD on which they perform together and separately. They're both jazz pianists and singer-songwriters. They co-wrote the hipster wannabe anthem, I'm Hip. We'll hear from Dureau later on this archive edition. First, we have a concert and interview with Frischberg, recorded in 1995. His songs have the wit that's associated with American popular song of the past, but most of his lyrics are about the anxieties and absurdities of life today, like this song, Lookin' Good, featured on his new CD.
Long as you're looking good, you can win the admiration of the common population. You can be a star long as you're looking good. You have made the main connection. You can take the next election. Don't care who you are. Don't have to know a thing. Just look like you're a sensation. Don't have to dance or sing to get that standing ovation. Long as you're looking good, let that be your main credential. You'll get treatment preferential. It's a rule that's still essentially ironclad. Remember, you can't look bad long as you're looking good. Looking good, you can tell the world to shove it, show them crap and make them love it. You can run their life long as you're looking good. They'll believe you walk on water, even trust you with their daughter, sometimes with their wife. Just leave them mesmerized, give their eyes a picture to play with. You'd be so surprised how much you can get away with, long as you're looking good. You can show up late for dinner, play the saint or play the sinner, a blank, a crank, a rank beginner, or just a kid. Remember, you can't look bad long as you're looking, long as you're looking good.
Dave Frischberg from the new CD, Who's On First. Frischberg's best-known songs include My Attorney Bernie, Heart's Desire, Sweet Kentucky Ham, Quality Time, and Peel Me a Grape. Some of the performers who have recorded his songs are Rosemary Clooney, Mel Torme, Diana Krall, Susanna McCorkle, Blossom Deary, and Jackie and Roy. Before our interview, I paged through a book of Frischberg's sheet music. It's not like I could sit down and play the arrangements or anything, but I was looking through the book of sheet music, and in one of the songs it says, where it should say, you know, like andante or moderate tempo or something, it says conversationally. I thought that's perfect. Yes, that song should it's not the kind of notation you usually see in sheet music, but I thought, yes, that's exactly right.
Well, it's not that uncommon, actually.
Really?
I think I've seen a lot of songs that have those kind of expressions, you know, forgetting the old Italian or German expressions. Conversationally makes a lot of sense. A lot of my songs sound so much better if they're sung conversationally. Like, I hear singers sing ballads of mine, and they hold those notes out because I know singers. They like to hear the sound of their voice, and they get caught up in how it feels and how good it feels to produce those tones. I think a lot of times it works against the song, holding notes out for a long time, you know. Sometimes I wish I want to tell them, when I say conversationally, I mean, you know, you got to throw that away. That's an aside almost. I'm not complaining, but a lot of times when I hear singers do my songs, I wish they wouldn't sing so much. You know, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Well, the last time I saw you perform, it was in New York a couple of years ago, and you did a song called
Wallflower Lonely.
Yeah, Wallflower Lonely, Cornflower Blue.
Yeah.
And it was I really liked the song a lot, and there was a very actually funny story that went along with the song, and I'd love for you to tell the story and play the song.
Well, when I was first starting to write songs in New York, and I'm talking about I had moved to New York, and this was the early 60s. In those days, it was customary for a songwriter to bring the songs directly to the publisher's office, and then you sit at the piano and you sing the song and perform it for the publisher. And the publisher, if he likes it, then he has demo records made and so forth. That was the norm. I'll shorten this up, but anyway, what happened was a guy asked me to write a cowboy song, the way he called it. Play a cowboy song. Why don't you write a cowboy song? So I came back and I wrote him. I said, I think I got a cowboy song. So this was it. This is what I wrote, you know. I'm wallflower lonely, cornflower blue. You'll never know how sad I feel remembering you. I tried to forget you. What good does it do? I'm wallflower lonely, cornflower blue. When we were together, it was sunflower weather. Today only clouds are in view. Your love made me happy more than I knew. But now I'm only wallflower lonely, cornflower blue. So that was my little entry into the country songwriting business, you know. So the guy says to me, the publisher says to me, he listens to this, and he says, you mind if I just give you a little tip on how to construct a song? I said, no, you know, please help me out. He says, play the bridge for me. I said, okay. When we were together, it was sunflower. He says, stop. What's that chord on the word sunflower? I said, well, it's a B seventh. He said, that's where you lose them. So what are you talking about? He says, well, that's not a cowboy chord.
What, did you have a witty retort?
No, later on I thought of a witty retort, and then and when I tell the story I pretend like I really said it at the time, but I didn't think of it till years later. I should have said to him, you mean if I play a B7th I'll lose the audience? And he would say yes, and then I would say I didn't know it was that easy. But I didn't think of it at the time. As a matter of fact, I probably, in those days, I probably took him seriously and probably avoided B7th for a few weeks.
See, now that's the kind of song you probably would not have written had you not been given this, like, unusual assignment, right?
Exactly. But, you know, in those days I was trying to write to satisfy the publishers and those people who were in the music business, the people who populated the industry. I was trying to satisfy them. So if they wanted cowboy songs, if I'm going to be a songwriter, I got to write what the market wants. So I tried to write the cowboy song, and I tried to write theatrical songs. I got involved with Frank Lesser's publishing company, and they asked me to write songs for certain properties they had in mind. It was almost a little exercise they were giving me to see how I would deal with a theatrical situation, you know?
Oh, what'd you write?
Gosh, I wrote a few songs for them. One of them I kept in my act for years after that. It was a song called Another Song About Paris. I wrote that song. Another Song About Paris. Oh. Lovers in the rain and flowers in the stall on the Rue Madeleine near the Place Pigalle. How amusing when the gypsies stole our wine. Remember Notre Dame where we chatted with the hunchback? The dim cafe where we had to send the lunch back? Ah, Paris in the spring. It was all too, too divine. Another song about Paris. Is there room for one more? Is there really a note or a word we all haven't heard before? And so on, about how many songs there are about Paris and how rife with cliches there are, you know.
Well,
that
one
was
your...
a song I wrote for as an exercise almost for the lesser people that they wanted to see what I'd come up with, you know.
So what kind of feedback did they give you?
Well, they were real
what
nice.
What grade did they give you?
I'll tell you what happened. You know, I worshipped Frank Lesser, especially when I first began to write songs. He specifically was my model. I thought he was the best songwriter going. I still do think he was the best songwriter of his generation. Anyway, he called me into his office, you know. He called me on the phone or had someone call, and I had an appointment to meet him himself, and I hadn't ever met Lesser. And I sat in his office for maybe an hour or more while he discussed my songs that I had submitted to the company, and he told me how much he liked them, and he told me what I could do to improve. He wanted to talk about lyrics mostly and not about music. He said he wasn't equipped to talk about music. I said, what are you kidding? The most happy fellow. He didn't want to talk about it, you know. He said, no, let's talk about lyrics. And he told me such interesting things, insights into how he makes his decisions about lyrics. He said to me in one song, he said, look at this song. Look at this colorful word you put here. He said, it's a very colorful word, and it operates beautifully in the lyric. He says, but don't squander it there. He said, put it someplace where there's a rest so that the audience can listen to that and savor it and understand it. He says, if you throw it away in the context of that jumble of notes, he said, they'll lose it. Either that, or when they hear it, their minds will be distracted and they'll miss the next few lines.
What else did he tell you?
Some kind of anatomical reference that he didn't like. He said, don't, for God's sake, he said, don't say things like my heart is breaking in two. He says, don't talk about the heart as if it were an organ, because then the listener sees this image of a heart, a picture of a heart breaking in two. That's not what you want to see at all. Because he was very concerned with leading the listener through the lyric and not interrupting the listener. He was very concerned with what the listener was perceiving with those lyrics.
My guest is Dave Frischberg, a composer, pianist, singer. Many of his songs, like Heart's Desire, Sweet Kentucky Ham, have been recorded by other performers, including Rosemary Clooney. And he has a whole bunch of CDs that are around. There's another way you might know Dave Frischberg without realizing that this is him, and that is through, what's the kids' music shows called where they teach you how to add?
Schoolhouse Rock.
Schoolhouse Rock, yeah. Mm. And one of your songs from there is actually quite famous.
Isn't that amazing?
I'm Just a Bill.
I'm Just a Bill.
About how a bill becomes a law.
Yeah.
And this was even in the film Reality Bites.
That's right.
That's how, that's how well known it is.
Well,
among the generation that grew up with these shows. And some of it's still on ABC, I guess, Saturday morning.
I'm Just a Bill is still on. It's still on rotation. I wrote that in 1974, maybe. That's 20-some years ago, and it's still on. And a lot of people know this song, and it shocks me because I never paid much attention to it. I don't watch kids' television.
We have to play it.
I will. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while you're waiting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill. That was sung by Jack Sheldon in the original recording of that. Listen to this, Terry. A couple of years ago in Portland, a friend of mine was in the hospital. I went to visit him, and I went to his room, and there was like he was sharing a room with somebody else who must have been really sick because there was this big screen. I peeked behind the screen, and this other patient was ghastly pale, and he had all kinds of tubes stuck in every orifice. He looked like he was on his way out. So I was talking to my friend, and my friend says, "Well, what have you been doing?" I said, "Well, I'm working for Schoolhouse Rock again." He says, "Gee, that thing you wrote years ago, I'm just a bill, I still hear that." And from behind the screen came the voice of this other patient, and he said, "Did you write 'I'm just a bill'?" And I said, "Yeah," I said to thin air, you know. And then from behind the screen, he began to sing it, the dying man singing my song, "I'm just a bill." And I said, "Oh, God, it was more than I can handle."
Wow, odd. What a strange experience.
Very odd. You know, you never know when. I kept saying, "You're singing too much. Just do it conversationally."
Dave Frischberg recorded in 1995. He has a new CD called Who's On First. It also features Bob Dureau, who we'll hear from later in the program. This is Fresh Air. Before I got into radio, I had a job in which I sat alone in a small cinder block office all day typing. The way I survived that job was listening to WBFO, a public radio station in Buffalo, New York. It filled my day with interesting interviews as well as jazz and blues recordings. I guess that's one of the things I value about listening to public radio. It gives me a way to connect to things I care about, even if I'm alone in a windowless room or driving on the highway. There's a price to pay for having public radio to turn to, but it's only the price of a pledge. Please call with your support. Thank you. Let's get back to our 1995 concert and interview with Dave Frischberg. His new CD, Who's On First, also features Bob Dureau. Now, when you started to play piano, what did you play?
Boogie Woogie, the blues. I was a blues player. When I was 12 or 13 years old, I was deep into Pete Johnson. He was my hero, Pete Johnson from Kansas City, and Joe Turner. My brother Mort, the guy with the keychain, he used to sing like Joe Turner.
Really?
Yeah, and so he and I would play the Joe Turner, Pete Johnson, Boogie Woogie records, and we would copy them. I would copy them off the record, and we would. That's how I began playing the blues. I could play in C, F, and G, the blues.
Well, I'd love to hear you play something solo at the piano. I mean, to play a piano solo.
Okay.
Well, tell us what you want to play and why. Why you've chosen it.
I haven't chosen it. Let me think.
Okay. And while you're thinking, I'll say I really love your piano playing. So when you perform on the show, I always like to get you to play something.
Well, you know, I mentioned Jay McShann. I love that Jay McShann band from Kansas City. I can play a couple of things that I remember from the Jay McShann band, which contained Charlie Parker, by the way, that band did. So, Jumpin' Blues, you know. And Walter Brown sang with Jay McShann. Shan, that's the Confessing the Blues. That was the stuff that I used to try to play like. I loved McShann's playing, and I loved Count Basie's playing, and Pete Johnson's playing. I was hooked on the Kansas City jazz musicians.
Did you ever get to see these guys play when you were young?
Well, I had occasion to meet and play with Jay McShann and duets and stuff. That was really fun. I admired him so. And I did meet Count Basie under very odd circumstances once. I don't know if you want me to go into it. It was very strange. I was rehearsing the show for Mel Torme, who was going to arrive a few hours hence. And I was rehearsing the band. And when I got there to rehearse the band for Mel Torme, this is a very odd circumstance because I had nothing to do with Mel Torme at the time. It was one of those phone calls. And when I got there, the band was Count Basie's band. I was rehearsing them. And Basie stepped aside, and I went to the piano and began to rehearse Count Basie's band and Mel Torme's opening number. I felt completely at a loss and because I hadn't heard the music either. So I said, well, this first one is called, God, what was called, Dogging Around or something like that. It was a Basie piece, you know. So I said, is everybody ready? And Freddie Green was sitting there, and I said, Freddie, you don't have your music out. And he looked at me with this, just this cold look, and he says, I wrote this. I rehearsed the band, and I said, well, that's fine. And Basie, from where he was sitting, said, what do you mean that's fine? That's terrible. Let me show you how it's supposed to sound. Oh, those guys took me that day. It was funny, actually.
Dave Frischberg recorded in 1995. His new CD with Bob Dureau is called Who's On First. We'll hear from Dureau in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.